You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, happy Monday. Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. And we are a quarter of the way through the season, so it is time to run through some storylines and see where the season is at. But we have quite the panel today on Locked On Pacers. Of course, on the other line, we have my co-host, Adam Friedman. Adam, how are you?
Pretty good.
And also here today, we have Kaitlin Cooper from Indy Cornrows. Kaitlin, what's up? How are you?
Good. Tired from the West Coast, being up till midnight.
Me as well. I'm glad I stayed up to watch the Battle of the Bogdanoviches, though. And also we have Whitney Medworth from SB Nation. Whitney, what's up?
What's up? How are you guys? Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Two friends of the pod. I believe you've both been on before. And as a quarter of the way through the season, it's a good time to run back through some storylines, see where we're at, see what we're going to look for going forward. It's really over a quarter of the season, but the timing didn't work out great. And with a big week with the injury to Vic and a bunch of other stuff, you know, it's a good time to run through some topics. So let's just jump right into it. And I'm going to call on Kaitlin first. Kaitlin, what is your first big storyline from the season so far?
My first one I'm going with is, which I've given these a lot of thought. I need to preface this that all of mine are going to build on one another into one culminating point. I've thought this out. It is the same old playing style. The first one, I mean, this is the third consecutive season that they're top five in three-point percentage and bottom five in three-point attempts. But the difference this year is, to me at least, their free throw rate is still bottom five, but obviously they can't make any free throws. They're 25th at that. And their opponent three-point percentage has really dropped off. They're dead last in that compared to fifth last year. And their frequency on their open twos has dropped from 14% to 10, but they're still living from mid-range. So that's a lot to overcome. That's essentially what all that means is they're essentially putting a lot of pressure on their ability to hit twos that are now more contested and to force turnovers. And that's a dicey thing for the fact that we're a quarter of the way through the season, for looking on to the playoffs especially, because I was looking at the standings today, and obviously that's a far way off. But if you look at Charlotte, Boston, Detroit, and Orlando, they're all top 10 at taking care of the ball in terms of turnover percentage. So they're going to need to be able to play teams that are really going to be giving up the ball if they're going to continue on with this general style that I thought was going to end over the summer when they signed shooters, and it didn't happen. So
I think we all thought Doug McDermott would be quite the cure to last year and the year before the three-point attempt rate woes. I know John Schumann wrote about it two summers ago in his One Team, One Stat stuff. And I was like, oh, that should change. Last year, I thought that would change when they signed Bogdanovich and Collison, and it didn't. And then for some reason, I fell for it again. I was like, sweet, McDermott will change everything. And he hasn't.
Yeah, and you look at the offensive and defensive rating rank-wise, so if you combine those numbers, which doesn't really mean that much, but like they were 13th and 11th last year, and this year they're 21st in offense and 3rd in defense, so it's like the same combined number, which is just sort of like an indication of that. It's a little bit different style in terms of they're playing a little better D, and they're worse on offense, but it's producing that basically the same result, and it's the same kind of issues, like Kaitlin was saying, that we had last year where they were taking too many long twos and they were taking kind of like inefficient shots, and they're just continuing to do them. And they've gotten better, I think, actually with Vic's injury, to take a little more threes and getting McDermott and Bogdanovich kind of more on the offense. But overall, it's been the same kind of inefficient shooting.
Yeah, I mean, their half-court offense ranks 19th in the NBA. And eventually, I just think their transition offense really good. But when the game slows down in the playoffs, are they going to be able to force that many turnovers, especially if they're playing an opponent that doesn't turn the ball over that much? And the fact that more of their twos are being contested also is kind of telling, especially with regards to Victor. But I'm not going to tip my hat too much with that one yet. So,
Whitney, you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, that was all very depressing. So. I didn't like any of it.
I like that. I like that addition. And they have been propped up by their D this year, the turnovers too. And it's not even like they really push real hard off of misses either, which could help a little bit if they do, like in the playoffs, like you said, Kaitlin. You know, if they are struggling to get the turnovers when the game slows down even more, they're already playing some of the slower games in the league. If they can run off misses, maybe they can mitigate some of that. But you know, when the stakes the highest and the execution's the highest, you know, who knows how that'll manifest itself.
It does seem, though, at least in some of the close games, that the defense is just really solid end of games. I mean, it seems like even the Sacramento game is kind of a pretty indication of that, even though they lost it. They pretty much they were terrible on offense for 4 minutes, but they were really good on D for 4 straight minutes, except to the Colley Stein kind of putback. But they were like pretty much contesting every single King shot in their face and everything, making kind of, I think, Turner had a block or two like at the end of the game. Like they are, their defense, you know, there are concerns it might not translate in the playoffs, but it does seem like at the end of games, the D is like really solid and holding them up at least.
I'm concerned with the 3-point defense a little bit. That's, I mean, being dead last is not good, but we'll see. Maybe I'd have to look deeper into that about what types of shots people are hitting. But I mean, it was bad against Charlotte, and some of that's Victor, and some of that's the fact that Sabonis and Miles were both dealing with injuries in that game, if I remember. But we'll see.
I feel like regardless of anything, though, you don't want to be dead last in any stat.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe in like mid-range shots taken.
Sure, that's fine.
Worry ball. Whitney, your turn. Give me a big storyline from this year so far.
Okay. Since that one was depressing, I'll keep mine depressing too. I have an issue that I feel like this time last year, we had so many like fun moments with this team. They were like such a different vibe from what we had been used to. We had a ton of those crazy comeback wins. The vibe, the camaraderie seemed like untouchable, something we'd never seen before. And it just feels like we don't have any of that. And I don't know if that's result of play or if that's just like what happens in the second year of a team. But it's been a little, I guess, disappointing in a way, just to feel like that team that was there last year and that whatever special thing was happening last year just doesn't seem to feel like it's going on. And I don't want to be like a body language expert or whatever you call those. That's not what I'm saying. But like, it feels a little less fun this year at this time. It's a little concerning to me.
It's because they're down, Lance.
That can't be it.
Well, I mean, not, right? I mean, that's the biggest
that difference. Fun. He's not that. I am not that much Team Lance to put it all on him.
Yeah, but how many highlight videos are like guitar playing, hop? I mean, he's the excitement, right? That's like all the videos and stuff like that was all him last year.
Yeah, surely we can have a fun team though without like a semi-problematic guy leading the way though, right?
That's what I was thinking too. Yeah.
I think being the surprise team is just a fun thing. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, what the Kings fans are watching right now. I guess I'm not a Kings fan. I don't know what the drama with their coaching and front office situation's like, but I mean, they're watching a team that I think a lot of people didn't expect to be very good, and they're kind of coming out and they're playing hard and playing a fun style. And I think last year, like the Pacers kind of came out of nowhere. I don't think people expected that or expected to see Vic pairing, you know, more athleticism with skill and the way that he did so quickly. And there was the clutch shots. And like you said, the comebacks and, you know, a little bit of Lance is can pick teams up. I mean, there's definitely a personality difference between Tyreek and Lance as far as like what you see from the bench. Like Tyreek's just a more subdued personality than what Lance is. So.
Yeah. Does Tyreek Evans have teeth? I've never seen him smile ever.
Yeah, he's just a very quiet, kind of more keep to himself type guy. So versus Lance, like last year, he had racked up like a million moments. He's out there like looking like a glitch in one game, playing air guitar, ripping the ball from LeBron, like he was lifting up Simba and the Lion King. Like there's a lot of Lance-ness.
Yeah, and I don't even feel like this team. I mean, sometimes you could say like, look, say so last year was like unexpected success a little bit. But I don't even feel like this team has pressure in that way. Like, I don't think anybody has massive amounts of pressure on them. So it's just been interesting to see how different it's been.
It feels like the new players are not like over succeeding or been better basically than they expect and stuff like that. And that's kind of what I guess would bring excitement to the team. I think last year was exceeding expectations. That was a huge deal. And the only time it was really exciting this year was Aaron Holiday had those like two or three game run where he's putting up 20 points. Like that felt like it was like last year's team sort of, where like everybody was going nuts on the bench. Holiday was making all kinds of plays, hitting step back threes on dudes. Like that's when everybody got really hyped. But like outside of that game and maybe the Boston game, you're right. There really hasn't been like any of those. Oh, everybody's going nuts crazy. Like feels like a real team commodity.
That's what I was going to say too, is to me, the fun is in the new things, you know, like, it's not as fun to be like, it's not fun is the wrong word maybe, but to be like, okay, this is the, like, this team is good. We knew that last year. Now that's not fun and new, but like Aaron Holiday is new and really fun. You've never seen this before. That's awesome. Or like Doug McDermott coming alive this week out of nowhere. Like, that was fun. That was awesome. You know, those are the kind of things that grip people into having the season being fun. And last year, you know, Oladipo's emergence, the clutch emergence, like things you haven't seen that much as recently as a Pacers fan before last year, was like all new and fun and awesome. And it was like, it brought everybody together. It was cool. And there's less of that new fun level this year to me.
My counterpoint to that is that, like, the Warriors, the Sixers, there's like a lot of teams that continue to have fun that aren't like just splashing new things in your face all the time. So that's why it's concerning a little bit to me, because I feel like it has maybe a deeper, there's like a little something deeper going on there.
Might also be because of what some of the other teams have done, you know, like Philly adding Jimmy Butler, what Milwaukee changing their style, Toronto adding Kawhi, like as far as like looking at what, where the Pacers are at versus where some of those other teams that were already have, you know, better records have already added more pieces. Whereas Victor is, you know, one of the loneliest stars in the Eastern Conference to an extent. So
look at Paul Pierce showing up on the podcast.
And there is a lot of tension, if you think about it, maybe that we don't see, is that a lot of guys are on one-year contracts or on their, like, 1 year left. And so that could be causing a lot of tension underneath everything that you don't quite see in press conferences or in interviews, because they're professionals, but they might be kind of affecting guys like, oh, if I don't perform this year, I'm not going to be in the league next year. I'm not going to get a big contract. You know, that's a big deal. You think about it, that like they have, I guess Turner would have made seven. So six guys basically on expiring contracts. And that's huge. And that can kind of throw a team off if everybody's trying to get stats.
All right. I'm done being depressing now.
I'm going to go do a fun one now, because let's talk about something fun if I can. Bojan Bogdanović is awesome this season. Speaking of fun things to watch, he had 71 points on this road trip, 27 last night to close it out. Leading the league in three-point percentage at 51.5%, shooting 4.2 a game, which, going back to Kalen's thing, is less than last year, but he is making an absurd number of them. His off-the-dribble game is substantially better than last year to me. He's getting to the rim when he comes around all sorts of off-ball screens. He's just been awesome, and it's really big for the Pacers to, you know, Tyreek was supposed to be the secondary creator and scorer next to Vic, but now they have it in the form of Bojan Bogdanović, and it's been awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been their second best player on this team this year, maybe. And he's obviously over the last four games, basically in the West Coast, has been their, maybe their best player. I think too, his conditioning is way up there. I mean, he played 38 and 37 minutes back-to-back games and still scored 27 on Saturday. So I think you can't say enough good things about Bojan. He just looks like he has finally found his place in the league, I guess. It felt like maybe before he came to Indiana, like they weren't sure, is he just going to be a three-point specialist? Can he play D? Can he get to the rim at all? And teams were kind of wary of him, and he kind of was floating around between Brooklyn and Washington and stuff like that. And now he's sort of figured out, okay, this guy can play okay D to remain on the court. And if you give him the right opportunities, he can score a ton of points and he can make a ton of threes and really just be a really good NBA player.
I'm just happy that they're playing him more at four and that we don't have double big bench lineups, so...
Yeah, the double big thing, that was such a scary flash of time. I'm so glad that never really manifested when Nate was talking about playing Kylo Quinn and Sabonis together at the same time. That was...
I mean, Kylo Quinn isn't to the extent of playing like Serafin and LaVoy Allen together.
Oh,
like,
my God. Don't
like,
say it.
Like, there was going to be that. There's workability there with Sabonis and Kylo Quinn. I just didn't want to see that when we need to get TJ Leaf or when they need to get TJ Leaf experience. And I wanted to see what Bogdanović could do at power forward. So I'm just happy that that's occurred.
Yeah, it worked well with McDermott last night. They played them for a big stretch there in the fourth quarter. It was exciting stuff.
Yeah, they're actually not a net negative when Bogdanović is at four and McDermott's on the floor with him, surprisingly. Wow. So
that's a good one. Adam, go. You're up.
All right. Well, I was going to go negative, but I'll go positive again with another one. Sabonis. So I said Bojan the second best player on the team, but really in my heart, I believe Sabonis has been the second best player on this Pacer team. And I wonder, well, what point do they need to get him more minutes? And I know there's the whole foul trouble where he averaging 3.2 fouls per game. But I wonder if there's kind of going forward, whether they need to get him like 30 minutes a game or something like that. Because he is just an offensive marvel out there at times. And if you look at his net rating, so Sabonis and Turner together have like a positive net rating of 0.4. Young and Turner together have a positive rating of 1. So that's close enough where you could play more Sabonis to turn it together. And then Young and Sabonis have a positive net rating on the court together of 9.7. So they're clearly Sabonis is really good when he's out there. And I know he doesn't bring the same defense Turner does, but I think they just need to find a way to get Sabonis out there more because he's clearly their second best offensive player, or maybe third, depending on where you rank Bojan.
Okay, I'll edit that out and I will go first. yeah, I agree that Sabonis' offense has been a huge boon for the team this year. Shooting an absurd, 65% this year, 64, something like that. When all his shots come around the basket, he's been efficient. And 5 of 6 from three. So someone eventually on Twitter is going to say that Sabonis is a better 3-point shooter because he's shooting 83% than Turner, and I'm going to laugh. His offense has been
amazing. I'm going to tweet it right now.
I think Turner's made 7, so it's pretty close.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe he actually is. Maybe I shouldn't be so hasty to shoot down that person.
I think I would have liked to see Miles extend his shot a little bit more than what we've seen so far. I will say that.
I think he really only made 7.
Yeah.
That's right, 7 for 33. Wow, that is awful.
Why are we getting back to the depressing Miles Turner talk? Come on, let's stay positive, that's guys. Sabonis has been really good.
This is how every Sabonis discussion goes.
Well, just then this week, I've been called a Turner hater and a Turner apologist. So,
wow.
I'm about over the entire Turner Sabonis discussion, actually. Like, I wrote the Sabonis cream of the crop article because I really can't say enough about what Sabonis does against switching defenses, the reads he makes. He doesn't just look and make a pass when somebody's open. He passes the person into being open. Like, some of the passes he made last night, even when he racked up turnovers, that was the reason why Nate went back with Sabonis late, even though Miles had the better overall game and was playing better defense than Sabonis was. Because when Miles came in late with about 3 minutes to go, they went 0 of 6 on 6 straight field goals. The offense just got gummy. Like, Sabonis just does so much with reads. He knows where to be, where to stand. He just greases the wheels with what he does with dribble handoff actions. There's not really enough that you can say about that. But with getting Sabonis minutes, I completely agree with Adam. Like, there's not really a good way to do this. And as soon as Nate McMillan said at the start of the season, like, playing two centers together hasn't been a good lineup for us, to me, to a certain extent, you're kind of eventually still tipping your hat that eventually you're going to have to make a choice between the two of them. I'm not saying it has to be this year or, you know, do it tomorrow, but if you're not, you can't pay two people that much money if you're not going to play them together. And here in these last two games, they kind of did, but in LA, they were -7 in about a 3-minute stretch. They got outscored 12-2. And last night, offensively, when they were on the court, it's probably the best I've seen them this year as far as adhering to the rule of one big in the paint at a time. But in the Lakers game, they had some moments again where Miles is going down to the post when Sabonis is already on the block, and then Sabonis is trying to back out when Miles is there, and just like getting him elbow room that just hasn't happened. And offensively, when they're both on the court, they're not even scoring a point per possession. Like, that's really bad. And I am going to go on a tirade here a little bit about the Sabonis Turner net ratings that they keep showing on TV, because that's 0.4 for one. But if you look at the offense and the defense, we're looking at 112 total minutes, and defensively, there's no way that number is going to hold with two bigs on the floor. Like, it's such tiny minutes that they play at a time when they're out there together. And a lot of times it leads to, like, they'll be playing with Corey and Oladipo at the same time, and maybe those two get a couple steals, and then Miles is coming out because it was just a means to get Sabonis on the floor. Like, I'm not saying it can't work with the two of them. I just don't think we've seen enough to be talking about even really what their net rating is, because until they start to really take it more seriously, I don't know that I really care about this discussion anymore.
Drop the hammer.
I did. I'm just kind of done with it, like, honestly, because if Nate says he's not really that interested in playing them together because they're both centers and they're only doing it sparingly against bigger lineups, and it's such tiny little bursts of minutes, like, there's not enough you can take from it. And offensively, they just haven't really been that good when the two of them have been out there, minus a few decent plays when they've done some high-low action and some other stuff. Like, it, to me, it just looks like a means when they're out there that they're just trying to get Sabonis more minutes, but that's my take.
230 points on 228 possessions isn't good on offense?
No. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know what? You talked about their defensive rating, propping them up. It's crazy that it's even doing that, because when they're on the court together, opponents are shooting over 41% from three. They've just missed like easy two-point shots almost more. And that lineup actually has done a pretty good job forcing tougher shots, but at the same time, they have no perimeter D at the four now, with one of them having to extend out more than they're comfortable doing. I'm with you. There's no way that defensive rating is going to hold up, and all of a sudden it's going to start to crumble at some point.
Yeah, I mean, if they can do more offensively like what they did against Sacramento, then like I don't want this to sound harsh, but then I might start to care more. Like until they're like going to take it that more seriously with what they're doing with the two of them, instead of just making it a means to get them both more minutes, which I understand. I understand that from Nate McMillan's perspective. It's just I don't really care about the overall discussion, I guess. And not Adam's point. I agree with talking about Sabonis in general, but.
Yeah, to flip to more positive again. Did you see that pass by Sabonis to McDermott? That's just something that was like the epitome of everything Sabonis can do that almost Turner can't, where he basically just led him perfectly to the rim. It was like the perfect bounce. Like Sabonis does that at least three or four times a game, it feels like. And I don't want to turn this into like, do they have to pick right now between Sabonis and Turner? But it just seems like besides Sabonis' foul trouble, he seems like he is the better player most nights.
It's so hard not to talk positively about Sabonis and not let it like delve into Miles.
That's what I was thinking too.
It's like Sabonis is just so good, and it's so hard to not to be able to separate the two, because I mean I don't know how you can.
No, that's fair. They're basically linked to each other until somebody trades one of them.
There's another duo of players that applies to that I think we'll get to later. Let's go back to Caitlin for headline number two.
Oh, okay. Number two, then, is I've titled it The Changing of the Guard. Not because we need to change, or not because they need to change lineups, but the changing of Darren Collison and Tyreek versus what they were a year ago. Like, Darren was flirting with 50-40-90 last year, and right now I think he's at 42-32-71. Like, that's a really far drop. And then, like, I looked at his threes this afternoon. He's attempted 49 in total, and he's 9 of 30 on wide-open threes. I mean, that's 6 feet plus of space. Like, I don't know. The Pacers are 9.9 points per 100 possessions worse when he's on the floor. And last night he had some decent moments pressuring the ball. He had 6 steals, but those 2 turnovers he committed late were pretty costly. And, like, what he does in the pick and roll, it's pretty paint by numbers. Like, it can be effective, just like last night when he had 12 assists. It can be effective in the regular season, but I have a lot of questions about him and what happened last year in the playoffs when Victor was getting trapped, and how he struggled with the shot in the middle of those 3 games. And then with Tyreek, basically what I wrote about him 2 or 3 weeks ago is still the same. Like, his rim finishing is dead last in the NBA. He's 31% around the rim in the half court. That's inexplicably bad. His assist percentage is a career low. His turnover rate is up a little bit. It's not the worst of his career, but some of his turnovers, like, I think you could do a power ranking of bizarre turnovers with him lately. Like, I don't, some of them are just inexplicable. Like, it just looks like lack of concentration. And then a few of the things he is doing decently, his pass is dribbling off the pick. He's still doing pretty good with those, even though he turns it over, but he's being used in the pick and roll less, and they're basically using him like a spot up shooter, which he's hitting the three decently, but I'm not really sure that's why you go and get Tyreek Evans, is for him to be a spot up shooter. So the changing of the guard versus what they had in those two people a year ago, what Memphis had at least, and what the Pacers had in Darren versus what they're producing right now. That isn't to say it'll stay that way. It just hasn't been very good through 20 games.
So then, do you think they should be playing Holiday and Joseph, I guess, almost over those guys more?
You know, I don't – that's tough to say, because the bench unit has been pretty good with Corey. I mean, Corey – and again, this was another thing I wrote. Corey's just making everything better. Like, his spot-up shooting is really high right now, and that might drop off like it did last year. But everything he does defensively, that's one of my favorite topics to write about. Like, you're just going to be better off when Corey's on the floor. And I don't know what the answer to that is as far as how long do you wait to see if Darren's going to start hitting shots again. I mean, I don't know. That's a tough question for Nate McMillan that he's going to have to answer.
Yeah, the shooting for Collison is insanely weird to me, because it's like unprecedented that a guy who leads the league in 3-point shooting just suddenly drops over 10% from three. I actually just wrote about this. It'll come out tomorrow. But the last decade of the three-point league shooter percent, that was the worst sentence ever. The league leader in 3-point percentage has never dropped by even close to as much as this. It's almost inexplicable. And I get why they're being patient, because he was so effective on offense last year with the low turnovers and the good outside shooting. But it's, nothing is there this year. It just seems like he's like a little slower doing it, like everything, like his shots a little slower, his reads are a little slower. He's getting the ball to guys, I feel like, a little late. And it's just not making him as effective, especially on the nights when he's not engaged on D. And meanwhile, Corey Joseph, who also started off last year shooting extremely well from three, so we'll see if it holds up this year. But Kojo has been awesome shooting. He's been great defending at the point of attack. And he's a really happy and infectiously cool dude, so I like rooting for him. So that is, to me, like with the Sabonis-Turner thing, the Joseph-Collison discussion is right there too, in that one has been substantially worse than my expectations, and one has been substantially better, and that makes it, you know, tougher to talk about both of them.
And they are closing games with Joseph a lot more. I mean, I know Phoenix, they had Darren Collison hit that shot, but a lot of times if they have like a small lead, they're playing a lot of Joseph just to kind of use his defense. And I just don't know if he'll ever win the starting job over, but I guess he could just win minutes over eventually. I guess if there's an argument you can make that he would help them not get into these big holes to start of games, because he's still good off the bench, that he helped bring him back. But that's the only way I could see them justifying starting Joseph and not just leaving the way it is and just trying to inch his minutes up more and more, just because I think they like the rotations they have a little bit right now. But like, Joseph's been really good this year and Collison's been bad. So at some point you got to kind of look at that, I guess.
I don't know. At the second half of last year, I remember that, I mean, well, everything, the numbers with Corey and Lance on the floor last year were horrific, and the two-man lineup, like, that was just really bad. And Darren was actually a little bit better with Lance just because of his spot-up shooting, and Corey in the starting lineup was way better because defensively Corey could guard the better guard, and Victor had a little bit more roaming ability. So going into the playoffs last year, which as it turned out, that Cleveland series was kind of weird because it ended up being almost more about defense than offense. Both teams weren't scoring a lot, but there was almost every playoff opponent I would have started Corey last year. And if the playoffs were tomorrow, I would be starting Corey. I don't know what the long-term solution is right now in the regular season and how long you wait for Darren to make shots, but I understand why Nate's doing it the way that he is.
Caitlin, I, for one, am shocked that a player had a bad net rating with Lance last year.
Oh, yeah.
Whitney, would you like to talk about the guards?
I was just going to say that Darren Collison is 31, because you guys are talking about this major dip he's having, and it just made me think about, not that 31 is old. I'm not calling 31-year-olds old, but I mean, I do think, because I'm older than him, I do think that LeBron has shattered a bit of like how we view age. And so I don't know, maybe his dip is just, you know, he's reaching that point where players definitely start to fall off a bit in terms of age, unless you're LeBron, who is a cyber human.
You know who turns 31 in 100 days? Steph Curry.
See, I mean, I just feel like there's a lot of people, not a lot, but there's a handful of athletes who that age thing isn't going to matter to them. And then there's a much larger percentage of athletes where it will matter to them.
Well, you can kind of say that with Thad too a little bit, as he hits, what, he's 32 now this year. He's kind of had some of the same little slight drop off in his game. I think the steep drop off is what's scary about Collison. You could see him settling back into like a 38 to 40 range, but him going all the way down to 32 is like really shocking.
Yeah, it is. It sure is. Anything else, Kaylin or Whitty? Do you want to do another headline?
That was a lot of ageism from me, so I'm sorry, but I can do my next headline. And I just want to say that based on the first headline that I gave, everyone else's sad headlines make mine make a lot of sense. So I think it's all correlated. All right. My second headline, I'm going to go way, way different. I'm going to talk about those gray city jerseys. What are those? Who thought those were a good idea?
Whitney, how hard did you laugh at the joke with the Memphis jerseys too, where someone said like, don't copy my homework exactly?
Yeah, exactly. Like, don't like copy your homework, but change it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Just like, I think that the city jerseys, they're either iconic or they're horrible. There's not much of an in-between on those. And I really did like last year's. I like the racing stripe. These were so upsetting to me. I was a little bit offended by how bad they were.
Well, the good thing was, well, it wasn't good, but when they played in them against the Hawks and they got down by like 14 or whatever it was and started so flat in that game, that if they had not won, then we could have just blamed it on the uniform, said they were cursed, and shot them to the moon.
That would have been nice.
I'm convinced the red hickory jerseys are cursed. So
we've been wearing them for too long.
Yeah, we have. And they have another year on them still.
No, it's too much. Too much hickory.
There's another year of it.
All we want are the Flojos. It's not that hard.
I think
the gray uniforms are trying to be the Flojos. They're like the Flojos' ugly cousin or something.
It's a horrible attempt. It's like the Flojos trying to be like modern art or something, and it went.
Maybe I'm a curmudgeon old guy, but the blue and yellow Pacers should not have a red jersey. Like, it just shouldn't happen.
I was fine with it as a novelty thing for like a minute. I was into it. And now I'm like, I'm done. I don't want to look at the Hickory jerseys anymore.
I will say, I saw like design for an all red Hickory with the shorts red too. And I like that personally, but I could see with Hickory, it's shocking when you watch them in Hickory dream, because it's like, they don't belong on this team because it's nowhere in their color palette. Like, it's almost like when it's like some of the beehive things the Hawks do, it doesn't really make sense either. Like, you're just like, how do you have like a black beehive jersey? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like the neon green ones they have, it's not in their palette. It seems not to make sense.
Yeah. No.
Timberwolves played the Celtics last night, and the Timberwolves were green. What?
They were like in that neon in the Celtics, like in their regular green. And someone tweeted about I see your Celtics green, let me raise you one better. And it was like that bright neon green.
It's all a cash grab, ultimately, right? That's all it is, Nike and the cash grab, basically.
So make a jersey that looks better.
Root cause analysis here.
You know, some of the city jerseys, like, have about history of the cities and stuff, too. And since Indiana's the whole state, like, it would have been cool if the Pacers would have got Crispus Attucks uniforms with their city jerseys.
Yeah, I would have. Cool. We could have done away with Hickory, like, 2 years ago and moved on to Crispus Attucks. Would be great. But since you mentioned that it's supposed to, like, mimic the city or honor the city, whatever the word is. We do have like the grayest skies of any state in the country.
Yeah, that's so true.
That is maybe that's what it is.
Right now, appropriately, very gray.
So gray.
Just continuing the depressingness of this podcast.
What happens when you bring Caitlin and I together?
Pacers are 13-10, guys. That's awesome.
That is true, because I was still getting emails, Whitney, about our preview pod last year into like February, with people like one person demanding that I like retract the podcast. I'm like we did another podcast and said we were wrong. They're like, oh, sorry.
Why do people want you to admit when you're wrong so bad? Like, they've never
been admitting when I'm wrong. That's what's funny. I say it all the time.
Me too.
I was happily wrong about last year's Pacers.
I was too.
Yeah, I'm probably wrong at least six times a podcast.
Yeah,
I was not wrong about the Pacers city jerseys being ugly.
No, you're not wrong.
Well, and for me, another problem with it is last year's were awesome. Like, last year had the racing stripe, it had the track on it, the color scheme was cool. I was like, yes, this is what they should do. It's the team is named after the car / the horse thing, and it's racing themed. Like, yes, this is great. And then they go to this gray thing, and I'm just, it's so deflating.
Very deflating is a great word for it.
All right, Adam, you want to do something happy or sad? Or should I go next? What do you want?
I'll do my not super happy one, but it could be turned both ways, but I'll do mine. So with Victor Oladipo's injury, I'm just concerned is how long can this team keep surviving without him? So the next week, their schedule is not terrible. They play the Bulls, Orlando, and Sacramento, and then they play Washington on the 10th, which could be a tough game, or could be, you know, who knows what's happening in Washington. They've survived without him, which is pretty shocking. Like, they're, what are they, 2-2 without him?
Three and three,
and 4-3 if you count the Hawks game.
Yes.
So they've definitely, last year they were 0-7 without him, so that's a huge difference. I don't know. I'm concerned that what this injury is and how long it's going to be. And I know Vic came out and said it's not really like that long-term serious, any surgery or anything like that, but this is an injury going on 2 years now, basically. And I mean, this team isn't a playoff team. He doesn't play. If he misses 30 games, they're probably not a playoff team. So I don't know. I'm just concerned.
I'm going to make a statement and then let you guys react. I get Kyrie Irving vibes from this knee stuff, and that scares me.
That makes me sick to my stomach.
I know, me too. But like the same stuff with him every year, like, right, he's threatening to like not play, and then he gets traded, and then he plays, and then it turns out something's loose in his knee and he has to miss the season. It's like, I don't know, man. I just, something feels wrong, and I have no doctor experience and I have no information. I'm just totally feeling the situation, but I'm just getting like these kind of vibes from every turn of this thing.
I felt weird about it like right when it happened, like right when he tried to play and then went back out. It's felt strange to me since the beginning, and then that tweet that dropped that was like out indefinitely. I agree. Something, I have no real evidence. I have no actual opinion other than it feels strange. And
it kind of reminds me, which again, like I have no idea what the injury is. It's being called knee soreness, and I'm not speculating about what the injury is. I'm just saying that Victor plays really hard minutes. So that reminds me of Russell Westbrook a lot. And Westbrook's obviously had his own issues with knee struggles. And like Victor this year, I looked a couple days ago, his usage is higher than any season that Paul George was ever with the Pacers. Even back to the season 2 years ago when six of those players were no longer in the NBA. Like they're just relying on Victor a lot on both ends of the floor. And some of that's his shot selection and some of it's the way that the offense is being utilized and the coverage that he's seeing that's changed. But he plays very hard minutes, so I understand why he's saying that he needs to be 100% when he comes back, because you don't want him to come back too early and have that be lingering. But then I also look and see that there's a lot of similarities between Russell and Victor, and that's been a recurring issue with Westbrook, which obviously I don't know that that's the same knee issue. Just stylistically, they're very similar players. Obviously, Victor was more efficient last year, but
I mean, all these things are sort of related, though. You take that and then like, you connect it to the Darren Collison not playing that well. And then you connect that to like Bogey's the only, like the second best, well, Sabonis second best player. But then you got Bogey, like, but those aren't really, you can't really take Bogey that far. He can't be your, really like your third dude. So it just, the team feels in a little bit of a bad place right now. And it doesn't, I don't want to overreact because they're obviously not bad, but it just feels like they're very much on a teetering line of like, this could easily fall off a cliff, like very quickly.
Well, they also really haven't played that many good teams.
Yeah.
Like the top eight teams in each conference, they're 1-3 against the top eight in the East and 1-4 against the top eight in the West. Like they haven't played a lot of good teams and they haven't beat a lot of good teams. So, and the fact that Victor's out right now, I mean, hopefully they can get through the little bit of schedule here that's left, that they're still against losing teams, and maybe he's feeling good, and maybe he comes back to a team where, like what's happened with Doug McDermott, they finally made an effort to purposely be feeding him touches and be getting him more open. Maybe some of those players kind of get into a groove with him not using as many possessions so that when he comes back, they're in a little bit better position. But we still don't necessarily know what they are against good teams because we really haven't seen him play that many.
Yeah, and the problem is they also need to run up like the record against the bad team. So like the fact that they lost to the Kings, who I know are actually okay this year, so I don't know where you rank them, but like if Vic played, they probably could have beat San Antonio, the Kings, and the Lakers. And if they go, let's say 2-1 against the Bulls, Orlando, and Kings again, like that's actually not good enough, because their path to 45 to 50 wins to be kind of the 4 or 5 seed is to basically just beat up on all the really bad teams and then kind of have an okay record against the Phillies and the Milwaukees and the really good teams. Cause like they went 0-2 against the Rockets. We'll see how with the Warriors this year, but they kind of need to almost run the table against the bad teams, which they did last year. They beat, I mean, except for that little stretch where they lost to the Hawks and Mavs, they basically beat every bad team all year. But my biggest thing with his injury is I don't know why he played in that Atlanta game. It was a back-to-back. They didn't need him clearly. Like it all goes back to why would you even have him play that game if you knew he was kind of injured? Like, why would you not give him the night off there? And that's just, it just still dumb that they let him play and then really, really, really badly hurt himself, basically.
That's kind of interesting, too, because I think Miles said after he played in Charlotte that he shouldn't have played. And then Sabonis in that game against LaMarcus Aldridge didn't look like he was moving right for most of that game, and he still played. So I don't know what the deal is with that.
I have decided to name this podcast episode Glass Half Empty.
Yeah, I'm still feeling like my original headline doesn't feel so bad now.
Good Lord. Okay, I'll do another fun one. I'll keep my high spirit alive. I won't say who, but one of the four panelists here did not like the Aaron Holiday pick at all and, quote, said, "Don't pick someone shorter than me," unquote. I won't say who it was. But Aaron Holiday is, like, looking awesome. You know, to come in that Hawks game in the awful jerseys, and trot up and hit a three on your first real possession in rotation minutes. That's, as Tim McMahon says, the cojones factor. And he's got that confidence. You know, he's looking actually good with real NBA skills as a rookie, which is awesome. He looks awesome, and that's really encouraging for the future.
I'll tell you what, I'm not tall enough to have said that statement.
Aaron Holiday is 2 inches taller than me. It was not me.
No, it was me.
Oh,
it was Tony. It was Tony. I was like,
it is not me.
It is me, Whitney. I said that.
I got you. I've muted your tweet. Sorry, I didn't see him.
That's okay.
Just kidding. I'm kidding.
Oh, well, I tweet a lot, so
I'm kidding. It was a joke.
Aaron Holiday, he hasn't been shooting the three super well right now, but he shoots it so easy. He can shoot it off the dribble. He pulls up from deep. And the confidence thing with coming in and hitting that and making that his very first shot when he came in that game. But also like the little things that you see that he's able to do. Just he came in, I don't remember if it was against the Hawks or who when I tweeted this, but he snaked his dribble in one game. He used a windmill crossover in the same game. And then he went into a dribble handoff with Sabonis, gave it up, got it back, reset, went away from the screen. Like that's a rookie, and those are all really encouraging things, especially because of what I said earlier. Like Darren has been efficient with pick and roll play, especially like last year with his assist to turnover ratio, but it's really paint by numbers, or maybe I should say like guitar hero, whereas like Aaron Holiday, and even to an extent, even though Tyreek turns it over with bizarreness this year, they shift the defense more with what they're doing than what Darren or even Corey does. So like, this isn't about, you know, who should be playing or who shouldn't. It's just a player to player comparison. And it's kind of going to be interesting when Victor comes back, because what Nate's going to do with regards to Aaron and TJ, because when you have that many guards in the lineup, which one of their development are you going to sacrifice? And again, like if some of those other players that are getting minutes aren't making shots or are continuing to underperform, like do you continue to prioritize trying to find them a rhythm over some of the younger players' development? Like that's going to definitely be a storyline to watch.
I mean, isn't this answer obvious? I mean, you definitely just dumping Leaf at this point. He just hasn't shown any signs of being an NBA player versus Holiday, who might have struggled the past three or four games. But, I mean, he's shown life that, like, if you give him a chance, he can maybe work through and really become, like, an NBA rotation player versus Leaf, I think, was determined there's no hope.
Right. I'm not saying you shouldn't play Aaron. I'm just saying that when Victor comes back and now that's essentially what you're going to do with TJ. There's not going to be a real easy way to get him minutes. And yeah. I think he has shown a few things here or there, and you might really need to have somebody else at that bat. I mean, look how many free agents they have. I don't think that you completely want to punt his development and just be like, oh, like, I just think that there's going to be a hard way to finagle that rotation.
Even with Vic out against the Kings last night, Holiday was out of the rotation in the second half. Like, Nate clearly wants to go veterans in close games anyway, so finding minutes in tougher games already for two young guys that are already squeezing minutes for is going to be very challenging.
Yeah.
I'm with Adam here that I would put, if you have to choose, quote-unquote.
Right. If you have to choose, yeah.
Give Holiday the minutes. Yeah, I'm with you. But I don't like to give up on young guys until like 2 or 3 years. And I think you have to give Leaf a little bit of time. And they already picked up his third-year option, so there's no point of punting on him now. But it's becoming very hard to give him minutes because they do not look good.
Well, and this team is kind of set up to not develop young guys. And basically they're set up to kind of win 50 games now. And that's the way they designed this team, which doesn't leave a lot of room for their rookies. Like they brought in 9 guys who could play rotation minutes without having Leaf or Holiday in the picture. Which, if you're going to want to play rookies, develop guys, you only bring in like 7 or 8 really quality guys. So if you add out Quinn, they probably have 10 guys who are probably better than the two rookies. So it's hard. And I don't know whether that was a Pritchard decision or a McMillan decision. I mean, or whether they, you know, didn't think Holiday would be this good this early or was ready, whatever it was. But you're starting to see that now. And I wonder if at the end of the day, this ends up with some rotation guy being traded out to make room for at least Holiday and Leaf to split some minutes just to kind of get them some more development. Maybe we're talking Darren Collison or even Tyreek.
But who knows? I mean, maybe they end up letting TJ play more with Fort Wayne. I don't know what they're going to do there. But like I said, I just don't think you completely don't want him to get minutes in the second half of the season like what happened last year. Yeah. Which, again, I understand that decision. And they were better in the second half with Trevor Booker and what they were doing. But I don't know. Like you said, you already picked up his third-year option, so.
It's tough. Well, my exciting thing turned into something depressing, so we're a really great thing. Aaron Holiday's been great, guys. Come on. Let's.
He is one of the Holiday brothers, which is a family I hold in high regard. So he's got that.
He just has a lot of, like, swagger to him.
He does, yeah. He's
really confident. Like, when he came in and just straight off the dribble, drain that three to start. This guy's got confidence, and it's exciting to at least watch.
That was the first, like, Lantian no, yes for me of the season when he pulled up. I was like, oh, geez. Because the first three of his career, he banked it.
I generally really like Aaron Holiday, so I would like it things to go well for him.
I'd like things to go well for every player on the roster, Whitney.
Yeah, it sounded rude when I said that, but it's not.
All right, we are flying through this. Not really. We'll do a few more. Caitlin, you want to finish compiling on your list here?
Right. So basically at the end, which we kind of touched on some of this, is that basically from my first 2 points is what does all this mean for Victor? Like, who's the secondary playmaker here? Because I can about guarantee that whatever opponent they play, especially when he plays with Miles, they're going to be jumping those screens and hedging and trapping just like they were last year, because they really haven't shown that any adjustments when that's happened so far early this year. And they already, that's already leading to turnovers again. So that was supposed to kind of be Tyreek. And if that doesn't turn around, what exactly are you doing there? Because I was kind of looking at using his speed on the weak side with what they could do over the summer. And I was kind of looking forward to seeing how they were going to be able to implement that in a playoff series, or even just having another person out there that wasn't going to be like a low volume scorer that would be able to make up for some of that whenever they get hard trapped. And I don't think they really have a good answer for that right now. And then also with Victor, just the overall change he's seeing in defensive coverage, especially against switching defenses and how they're taking away his dribbling threes, which I wrote about a couple weeks ago. And a lot of this goes back to Thad's jump shot completely like falling off a cliff. Clear back to last February. Like, what's interesting is I remember back in like 2012, I want to say, Rondo, when he was still playing in Boston, was hitting mid-range shots at a decent clip. And I remember Doc Rivers saying, like, he's going to have to do that for a while because his reputation is he doesn't make them, for defenses to adjust to him actually hitting them. And that was, like, right before he tore his ACL. He was actually hitting that shot. Thad, defenses weren't really adjusting to the fact that he wasn't making shots last year, and now they are. Like, you'll see the defender in the corner start taking extra steps as soon as Victor comes off that screen off of Thad. And I give Thad credit that he's still willing to be a bad shooter. He's still shooting it, but I mean, clear back to last February, let me look at the number. He's 27% outside of 8 feet since last February, including now. His free throw is like 50%. So that's going to be a problem as far as people in the playoffs too, taking extra steps off of him. So I don't really know how they're going to ease the coverage that Victor's going to see unless things change with what they're doing. So that's my last depressing point, and that's how it all culminated into a big dark cloud.
Caitlin, how's your weekend going?
Oh, quite good, actually.
There we go. All right. Some happy from you.
So I have the answer for how they solved the Victor Oladipo stuff. I think the answer is the second playmaker is on another NBA team right now.
Yeah, I was going to say this too. So Christian Winfield at SB Nation wrote about this like probably a month ago now, but it was like, Pacers might have to face reality at some point that they've got, that this current construction of a team is not it.
I think they know that. To me, it's been like they've preserved cap space for the summer for a reason. And maybe the Turner extension made me think like maybe not, but I feel like they intentionally saved all this space so they could try to sign a guy and then make the necessary moves to build a team around the star that they now have. I know it's hard to like say, we have a really good player and we're not trying to necessarily go for it right now, but I've always thought that was the plan, is to, you know, have two development years and then they have all this space finally before they have to pay Sabonis the next summer that they can really go for it.
I think it's time to like cash in on the expiring contracts. They have a bunch of them. Just
yeah.
And it's time to put some piece together with the first round pick, and maybe you could get a team that really wants to get off a bad contract too and just go get somebody who is really, you really trust to be the number two.
But the value of expiring contracts is to take back longer term salary for a team that needs to get off money.
So Jan Mahimi and Bradley Beal then. I mean, that's what I'm sorry, that's what I'm getting around to.
If that could happen, they would have done it. You have to match so much salary for that it makes your team worse. It's a hard balance, and that's why I feel like they've been intentionally, you know, holding strong with what they have.
Who are you even going to go get with said money that's available?
I don't know. That's not my job.
I know that, but I just mean like what are even the options if you're not going to try and acquire it, force it via a trade? Like, what really are your options to even go get?
You have to try first. I mean, they'll never get an A-list guy. It's not who they are, but like, there's no way the Bucks are going to be able to pay both Eric Bledsoe and Chris Middleton. You know, one of those guys will be imminently available. The Clippers are going to have some crunch of numbers where their team is too expensive for the guys they're trying to keep. who knows what will happen on any team. Like, there's always a crunch of who ends up bad or who doesn't want to pay their team anymore.
Whitney, you've hit the crux of the argument Tony and I have had going on probably a month now. Of just like, he thinks they should wait till the summer. I think they should do something in February because there won't be enough good players there. Like, this is just like, I don't know. I think it's time to make a move, but Tony's been preaching next summer.
Yeah, the only reason I think it's time to make a move is because, A, let's be honest, the free agents that we end up getting are never really the one. And then the trend around the league right now is like to take a chance on a dude that is either at the end of his contract or wants out or whatever, and then trying to convince him to stay. And it's like, it's been working a bit. I mean, it almost happened to us with Oladipo to some regard. And so it's just like, you might just need to take the chance to get somebody here that can spend time in the system and enjoy it versus praying that you can convince someone to come to Indiana and wear those gray city jerseys.
Plus, it's probably worth sacrificing, you know, maybe the 5 seed for the 7 seed to actually, like, if you're going to sacrifice some games this year to kind of make a roster temporarily worse, they'll get, you know, because you can fit, they'll have enough cap space to probably fill around some other rotation guys next year. But it's worth it. Like, I don't know what they're playing for this year at this point. Like, at this point, they're going to be the 5 seed. They're going to play probably Philadelphia or Milwaukee or Boston, depending on who kind of figures it out. And they're probably not going to beat them. So why not make a move before, like you were saying, before the summer, because they can at least like guarantee himself a guy versus kind of in this limbo for a month. And then you end up with some half mediocre free agent.
The reason I would be pro trade is that their cap space is sort of fake. And I wrote about this before. It's like, yeah, you have whatever, 40 to 50 million of space, but you also have 6 expiring rotation players. So like you have a lot of needs to fill that with, and lumping it all into one guy necessarily doesn't make a lot of sense. But Holiday's emergence has helped with that a little bit. So that might make some sense to take on something to have guys on your team who are good players. But again, I think they've had a plan, and I don't think that accelerating the plan is necessarily good. I think team building always goes crawl, walk, run. And I can never say that fast without stumbling over my own words, but I think they're transitioning from walking to running. And you know, when you go too fast, bad things happen, like the Wizards.
It's a fair point.
I don't know. I think somewhat the market, though, this summer, there's going to be a lot of teams with cap space. But so there's going to be – it's not the same as last year when it was cash-strapped and it was like, oh, the Pacers and Philly are kind of two of the playoff teams that have – can that free agents can come and if they want to compete and they also have money. Like next year there's going to be a lot of teams with cap space that you're going to be competing. Like a lot of teams are going to want Chris Middleton.
Yep.
It's not just going to be – I mean –
I agree.
But you got to take that into account. Like, Lau, they have contracts that can be fillers. I mean, I don't know who they go after. I mean, I do think it's important that they find somebody to play with Victor that's going to be able to initiate offense when teams try to force him into being a passer. I think that was a big issue last year, and I think it's still going to be an issue this year unless, you know, Tyreek really figures it out.
Yeah, I just don't feel like they'd sign one of their best free agents in team history, which is sad to say, in Tyreek Evans to a one-year deal without plans for a brighter day in following summers.
No, I'm sure that was their plan. I'm just concerned.
I'm not sure it'll work. It's just what I think.
I'm just concerned with how some of the free agents, I mean, that would fit with what the Pacers, I just think they're going to be competing with a lot of teams that also can promise them money and promise them a place to compete.
Right, and now you're coming off an argument of, yeah, we were 5th with no real chance of beating 1 through 4.
And we also don't know how Victor's knee situation is going to be by next summer either, so, or how that's going to pan out. So,
plus, you want a guy who can take some usage off him as well, like you're saying. I mean, yeah. Like if his knee isn't a long-term issue, you want a guy who can not allow it, but what's his usage rate right now in, like, the mid-30s?
Yeah, it's right around 30, yeah.
Wow. So, like, you want a guy who can maybe get Victor down to, like, 27, kind of like the Thunder been trying to find with Paul George, sort of. Like, they needed another guy because if you play Westbrook at ridiculous usage rate for so many years, he wasn't going to hold up. I mean, it's not possible for anybody not in LeBron to hold up at that kind of usage rate.
You know, last year I always said the Pacers are dying to have someone like Paul George. He would have been perfect.
I will hang on to my hill for forever and ever.
But his personality-wise, he doesn't fit here anymore.
I understand that, but his playing style would have been perfect.
Yeah, but he had to be the number one here, so it wouldn't have worked.
You're right.
Oh, gosh. How does every discussion end in the same sad things? Is this the type of people that we are?
I think they're going to trade for a big star. I'm excited. I think they'll get somebody. I don't know if he'll be Beal, who I
would not
all wish they'd get.
Expectation.
I don't know. I would put it at like, let's say 35, 65, they're able to get a guy.
I would not set yourself up for that disappointment.
Well, you know what? I have to have some positive.
The other disappointment is waiting for a free agent to sign here this summer and them not coming. So.
I understand. You're right. You're right.
I guess we'll just each pick our own poison.
Oh, God. Cusco's poison. I'm going to watch Emperor's New Groove tonight. We're at an hour, so I don't know if we have time for a ton of more stuff.
How many people? We got
Me, Whitney, and you left to do a third one.
Does everybody have time or no?
I'm fine.
I'm fine. I was just going to say my next one was it goes off of Caitlin's a little bit. I think I'm going to start trying to drink a gallon of water a day like Oladipo does.
I just don't understand why you can't measure the water out into a bottle and drink that from the bench. Why do you need to drink it straight out of a jug?
I feel like it's some sort of like motivational tactic. Like, here's my big, ugly, basic jug I got from Kroger's. And I'm going to just drink out of it now. And I've thought about it. I think I'm going to try and do it.
I think it's like a mental thing where if it's just there, you keep drinking it. Like, I feel like it's exactly. Like when you have like, I don't know, when you have something in front of you, you tend to just like you have a cup of water or whatever, you just kind of keep sipping it. I think it's the whole mental thing. But the picture of Oladipo where he's like chugging the water is really funny off the bench from a couple games ago.
Yeah.
They could sponsor on it because it's such a big jug. Maybe that's the eventual goal. Put Kinetico in huge letters down the side of the gym.
I need that Kinetico. One day I'm finally going to break and Chris Denari's commercial is going to work.
This episode is not sponsored by Kinetico, but you know.
Sorry, but it is sponsored, by extremely vague and basic 1 gallon water jugs.
I think there was even a picture of him carrying like two of them onto the plane.
Yeah.
So like, I respect the commitment that like, he's not even playing. He's not losing fluid and he's sitting there like chugging back a jug of water.
So do you think he fills them up with water, like from the sink or water fountain, or do you think he buys them like filtered, purified? Whatever?
I hope he's.
And then rips the label off.
Yeah. I hope he's pouring some high quality H2O in there.
It's Michael's secret stuff. Is, let's be honest.
Yeah, I hope it's just not straight out of the faucet.
I don't know. It depends. I guess where I don't think California has great water, so
conspiracy theory. It's vodka.
That's a lot of vodka.
Okay. Yeah, that's a lot of alcohol.
Maybe Vic's having a good time when he's injured.
Maybe that's why his knee isn't healing fast enough.
Yeah. Oh man. Yes, I love the water jugs. They're very exciting. They're fun. Whitney, I appreciate a fun thing. That was good.
Yeah, I tried. I tried not to be negative the whole time.
You know what's a fun thing? That Miles Turner pranked us all with a haircut.
That was fun, too. That was fun.
That was fun.
I actually wish he would have cut it.
Where are we?
I have a Miles Turner positive one we could do.
Okay.
Yes, let's do it.
All right. So,
wait, do you hate Sabonis?
Are you a Turner apologist?
I've probably been accused of being a Turner hater. I have actually. I know for a fact I have like multiple times. Can we be positive about how Turner actually is more competent at the end of the games than he has been in his past? I know he isn't fantastic every single night, but like 4 or 5 nights this year on close games, he's been like actually pretty good at the end of games. The Phoenix game, he was pretty good. Like Chicago, he's pretty good. Miami, he was pretty good at the end of game. Like he's not a complete disaster, mistake-filled player at the end of games. Like, I think it's a huge positive for him this year.
I think he's made strides as a defender. That's why I wrote that yesterday. Like, if you watch him moving, even last night, like, people were talking about the Willie Cauley-Stein putback, which I still think they were trying to force. De'Aaron Fox was getting to his left hand, and that's why Turner was over. Thad needed to come and sink and box there. But regardless of that, like, he's moving more fluidly. Like, you'll watch him, and he doesn't stay quite as long. He gets back to the roller a lot better than he was last year. And they've used the proof of that is that they're being more adaptable with what pick-and-roll coverage they're using. Like, if you go back and watch the Portland game, he was coming a lot higher. They're using aggressive drops. I've seen him hedge some, so... And then just the overall like blocking percentage. Like it's funny because he makes mistakes and then he fixes his own mistakes. But yeah, like at the end of the games, what you said, like definitely Chicago. Phoenix, I was just happy when he made the three because one, he got his feet set behind the 3-point line. And two, because Darren didn't dribble off the pick and immediately pick the ball up at the elbow. He actually went all the way and then used like a throwback pass. So both things were riveting to me that –
And his defense on Booker, too, was really solid, where he picked him up on the perimeter. Booker kind of beat him around the corner of the rim, I guess, and kind of – but he's able to stay on and block him. Like, that was
– Right, no, that was definitely good, deep corner. And then he couldn't, Booker couldn't even use the rim to get it up because Miles blocked it.
Already dimed up Bojan in the corner. That was pretty nice.
Yeah, that was good too.
That whole game was just awesome.
That's some of the thing with Miles right there. Like, if you compare Miles just to himself as a rookie, like at Summer League, he didn't register an entire assist when, or even one assist when he played in that entire time in Summer League, because he just didn't have a lot of passing vision, like to pass whenever he went and pivot when he's in the pick and roll, like that pass that he made to Bojan. So like, if you just look at him against just him in the absence of Sabonis, there are ways that you see growth just in the details. Like, I remember vividly one possession early when Vic was still, I assume, healthy. He came up there. He came up to the top of the key, and Memphis was icing Vic in the very first game of the season, and Miles changed the angle of the screen into a step up so that Vic could snake and get into the paint. You would not have seen Miles do that a year ago. He wouldn't have had that recognition. So, like, it doesn't necessarily show in the numbers that Miles has improved, but I do see ways in the details that he has.
Wow. I'm going to make a burner account and make fun of you for saying all that. You apologists.
Yeah, I'm not going to go negative here. There's a way to go negative, but I don't think I should. We don't need to rag on Turner. But
I try so hard to stay positive.
Well, because
how is this possible? They literally have a winning record, and we're like,
Well, also, because we haven't talked about Vic at all, and if we were talking positive, we could talk about how great Vic's been this year, but he hasn't played in six games. But I'm getting delirious now. Six or seven games, so it's hard to talk about Vic.
Right. Yeah,
it is.
Because he's the positive part. He's been awesome.
The 4-1 Mad Ants have been a walking highlight reel, and that's really fun.
Only you would know that.
Watch some Mad Ants games, Adam. You'll enjoy it, I promise.
I know, I should. I have so much NBA brain space.
The Mad Ants, that's amazing.
I have so much NBA brain space, and I just don't always have the time to just loop in the G League.
I have an issue with the Mad Ants where I could have sworn that they spelled Mad Ants with a Z, and they definitely don't. And I've just been forever upset that they spell Mad Ants with an S.
So we have to sort our posts on 8.9 seconds, we have to pick a category, and the Mad Ants category is spelled with a Z. So at first, for a while, I was like, is there a Z at the end of this?
Wait, did their team used to be spelled with a Z then? Like, why is that a thing that I think?
I don't know. Maybe
I'm crazy, so it's not possible that I just made that up, but
I've tried.
I think it's funny that they call the dance troupe up there the Madam Ants. I find that humorous.
Did we see Scott Agnes's tweet of the Kings dance crew last night? That was fantastic.
I saw that. That was funny.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, I have that saved to go on B-sides, actually.
Yes! Yeah. I was scared for a moment when you switched back to social.
Oh, no. B-sides is insane.
Let's go. Yeah, I'm not seeing any Mad Ants with a Z, but I also have thought that.
Yeah, I'm about to go into a deep dive and find why I thought that.
Well, I am now learning that they decided on their team name between the Lightning, the Fire, the Coyotes, and the Mad Ants.
I'm on the same Wikipedia page.
Wikipedia, baby, let's go.
I would like to know what the reasons why they were even thinking about the Coyotes. That's
odd. Aren't there Coyotes in Indiana, right?
Same reason the Brooklyn Nets were going to be the Swamp Dragons or whatever. Just for fun. It's silly.
Maybe Jared Wade was the guy who always typed Mad Ants with a Z, and now it's just stuck.
Oh, that could be.
I'm going
to
keep
it. It also kind of bothers me that they changed their color scheme to blue and yellow to match the Pacers. Because if you're a Mad Ant, it should be red, like a fire ant.
They can give them all their hickory jerseys.
Yeah, yeah.
It was awesome last year on Mad Ants Night when they had the Red Ant and Boomer running around together. Ooh, that can be my ending positive. Boomer has been fantastic this year.
That's good.
Boomer has been sensational.
That's good to know.
I don't have a ton of Boomer hot takes.
Yeah, I don't either. But
I do. I do have one Boomer hot take that fur is like a chameleon, because why does it change to red and yellow for Hickory Night? Like, he's a cat. He's not. He's not a chameleon.
I have a Boomer hot take.
Yep. All right.
Boomer is a cat, then why does he come out of a doghouse on Groundhog's Day?
Oh. Yeah, that's...
Boomer might be having some issues, with the skin color, the fur color.
I smile every single time I see Boomer in the fake Indy car driving around on the court. And I just think it's the funniest thing. So it makes me happy that they're doing that again.
I'll tell you what, whoever does that mascot When they do the thing where they jump off the sky raft or whatever it is, I mean, that takes some guts.
Did you do that? I would not be able to do that.
Oh, I always think he's going to, I don't know if it's he or she who does him, but I always think they're going to like fall and like get hurt and have like the terrible night.
Well, remember when the Nuggets guy passed out up in the air?
Oh no.
Oh yeah. That was scary.
That was so scary. And they just like lifted him slowly down. Ugh.
All right. I'm in an extremely deep dive on Twitter right now of people using Madden in their tweets.
Oh man, what have we learned? Anything?
Nothing productive at this point.
Does anyone have any other pressing topics they would like to talk about of the Indiana Pacers?
Wait, Adam, did you give your third thing?
Yeah, what did I do?
Oh, it was Miles, wasn't it?
It was the Miles pause. Tony didn't do a third one. No, he just did a third one.
No, my actual other ones on my list were Darren Collison's struggle shooting, which we already talked about, Tyreek's poor finishing at the rim, and Tyreek's turnovers, and we've covered both of those. So
look how we all were so negative.
I mean, I have some more Tyreek negative takes if we need them.
Oh, well, Sabonis, Bogey, and Corey have all like been better over year over year. I think they've been better this season, and we touched on all three of them. So
yes, true.
Yeah.
Good summary.
That is true.
And Vic is still awesome. And when he plays, he's like a top 15 player probably in the league.
Yeah. If anyone makes it to the end of the podcast, we did have positives.
Edmund Sumner, better than last year, too. Didn't even say his name today. I'm sad he's not playing more, but there's not a spot for him.
Yeah. Aaron Holiday kind of took all his thunder.
Yeah. It is what it is.
There probably could have been a spot for him during the start of the Laker game when they started out 2 of 20 and the Lakers had 7 block shots.
Well, yeah, I have stuff on Sumner, but not for this. Does anyone have anything they would like to talk about on the way out of here? Okay, not everybody at once.
Go Pacers.
Go Pacers. Okay. Anybody writing anything they want to promote right now?
No, I think the only thing that'll be up for me in the coming days is Adam writing a recap of this podcast.
Yeah, there'll be a recap. This will be fun. I've been taking a little notes about what to write about. I think I'm thinking about writing about Sabonis just because I'm in love with Sabonis this season. I thought he's been playing really awesome. Until Saturday night, he'd been playing really awesome.
That's my favorite. Well, yeah, that's probably my favorite cream of the crop article. That or the one about the WTF play. I like both of those.
That one was awesome. How did you even notice?
I was watching it back and I noticed Kenny Atkinson using that phrase, which I won't use on the podcast. And I was like, that was a really strange way to say that. Like, because he didn't look angry when he was saying it. So then I looked back to see what was going on in the court and I was like, yeah, I'm going to trace this back. That was a lot of research to go down a very deep winding path to arrive at that. So that was one of probably my favorite things I've written in a while.
Well, after our West Coast trip, we can all sleep this week as they play Tuesday, Friday home games. And I think they're both at 7. They are. That's
going to seem so early. I'm going to be like not knowing what to do with myself.
I got home Thursday and went to the gym and then came home at 8 and then like rode a little bit and I looked up. I was like, the game's in 3.5 hours still. This is crazy.
I'm a very old 20 something, so I don't like staying up until like 12:30 and 1 to watch a game. So
the Lakers one was rough. That was late. The Kings one was fine. It's Saturday night, didn't matter, but the Lakers one was tough.
Well, it was you probably almost went to sleep with the first quarter because that's kind of how the Pacers looked. Like the LA nightlife was definitely undefeated in the first quarter of that.
Oh yeah,
like this was a wild Wednesday night for the team, right?
That's what it looked like.
Win in LA.
I always see jokes about the LA nightlife and I thought about it, but I was like, no way they went on it on a Wednesday, right?
Dude, it's LA.
Yeah. It's Los Angeles and you're an NBA player. You probably wouldn't.
All I know is that they started 2 of 20 and the Lakers had 7 blocks in like 7 minutes and the Lakers made the first substitutions of the game, which is really what matters here.
Oh my gosh. We have to stop ourselves before this just becomes an overwhelming ball of sadness.
I have found the first ever Matt Ants tweet with a Z.
Wow.
And it comes from AJ Ratliff, who said, I was just drafted by the Fort Wayne Matt Ants in 2009.
But he was just drafted, so maybe he was like really excited and wanted to use a cool form with a Z.
I'm taking this all back to AJ Ratliff.
Wow. Yeah, DM him. We need to know. Hey, don't know if you're still playing basketball. Who drafted you originally? All right. I have nothing to promote. So, Adam, you want to close this out or you want me to do it?
You can close it out.
Okay. Me and Adam have yet to discuss our schedule for the week.
Because you have to stay on for the podcast to figure that out.
So I have no clue what to tell you guys is coming this week. But as just noticed, whatever, they only have three games this week. So expect previews for all of those, obviously, with a nice gap day Thursday for us to figure out something fun to do. I hope you guys have a great week and don't have to stay up late. So, yeah, thanks for coming on. I hope you enjoyed the fun panel we had. Caitlin, Whitney, thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, too.
You'll have to be back before you know it. See you guys tomorrow. Have a great rest of your Monday.